Hello and thanks for joining us for this episode of Into the Killing. We know there are a lot of cases out there to cover, but we only have a small team working on this podcast. So if you know of some cold cases that were eventually solved that you want us to cover on Into the Killing, we'd love to hear from you. Just go to criminallist.com, then go to the Submit a Case page. On that page, you can also suggest cases for our two YouTube channels, Criminally Listed and Paranormally Listed. For today's case, we're going back to May 1975. On May 6th and May 7th, 1975, 36 tornadoes touched down in the American Midwest and the South. South Dakota, Iowa, Texas, Mississippi, and Louisiana were all hit by tornadoes. The most devastating tornado touched down on the afternoon of May 6, 1975, in metropolitan Omaha, Nebraska. It was an F4, which is the second strongest tornado. Three people were killed. One woman was pulled from her house and found in the backyard of a home several homes away from her own. 130 people were injured. That single tornado caused $250 to $300 million in damage. Accounting for inflation in 2024, that is $1.4 billion to $1.7 billion. It is one of the costliest tornadoes in the history of Nebraska. On May 14, 1975, screenwriter Dalton Trumbo was presented with the 1956 Academy Award for Best Story. Trumbo had won the award 19 years earlier for the film The Brave One, which he wrote under the name Robert Rich. Trumbo started his screenwriting career in 1936. In 1943, he joined the Communist Party in the United States. In 1947, the Second Red Scare, or McCarthyism, was rampant. It's called McCarthyism because the Red Scare's driving force was Wisconsin Republican Senator Joseph McCarthy. Several Hollywood writers and directors were accused of trying to influence Americans with communist ideologies through their films. In November 1947, Trumbo and nine other screenwriters and directors were called to testify before the House Un-American Activities Committee. They all refused to testify and were cited for contempt of court. Trumbo was sentenced to a year in federal prison and he served 10 months. After his prison sentence, he was blacklisted in Hollywood. Yet he continued to write screenplays under different pseudonyms. He wrote some of his most famous screenplays during this period, including Spartacus, Exodus, and The Brave One. The Brave One was not the first Academy Award he won while blacklisted. In 1954, he won the Academy Award for Best Writing for Film for Roman Holiday. His friend and fellow screenwriter, Ian McKellen Hunter, was credited as the writer on the film, and he accepted the award. But the Academy Award for The Brave One went unclaimed. Then on May 15, 1975, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences president came to Trumbo's house and gave him the Academy Award statue. Dalton Trumbo died over a year later in September 1976 at age 70. In 1993, his widow accepted his Academy Award for Roman Holiday. On May 20, 1975, Cambodia's communist regime, the Khmer Rouge, began to execute civilians in what has become known as the Cambodian Genocide. Cambodia is a country in mainland Asia. In the 8 years before the genocide, there was a civil war in the country, pitting the Republic of Cambodia against the Communist Party of Kampuchea. The Khmer Rouge was an armed wing of the Communists. In April 1975, the Communists, led by General Secretary Pol Pot, took over the country. Pot planned to make the country an agrarian utopia. They first started executing members of the old regime. Then, they began killing business leaders, journalists, students, doctors, lawyers, intellectuals, and ethnic minorities. Many were killed with pickaxes to save bullets. There was also mass starvation and widespread disease. Many people were also worked to death. Pol Pot's reign of terror ended in 1979 after the Vietnamese army invaded the country. During the 4 years of the genocide, it's suspected that 1.5 million to 2 million people were killed. When the army invaded, Pot fled to rural Cambodia. In 1997, Pol Pot was put on trial, but was mostly for show. Pol Pot died at age 72 in April 1998 while under house arrest. In 1984, May 20th was declared a National Day of Remembrance in Cambodia. It's still honored today as a national holiday. On May 3rd, 1975 in America, the number one song was He Don't Love You Like I Love You by Tony Orlando and Dawn. The number one movie was the disaster film The Towering Inferno, starring two film icons, Paul Newman and Steve McQueen. Castleman, Ontario is a village between Canada's capital, Ottawa, Ontario, and Montreal, Quebec. Claude Legault was a beef farmer with a farm just outside of Castleman. On May 3, 1975, he was repairing some fence on his property. His property was along the Nation River. He noticed something floating in the water about 100 feet from the overpass for Highway 417. It turned out to be the partially nude body of a woman floating face down. She was only clad in a blue bodysuit that was buttoned up the front. Her wrists and ankles had been bound by neckties. One was used on her wrists and two had been used to bind her ankles. There was swelling on her ankles and wrists, which suggests she was bound before she died. There was no water in her lungs, so she was dead before she went into the water. The medical examiner determined that the cause of death was ligature strangulation. A tablecloth, hand towel, and towel covered her head. A 2-foot cable was tied loosely around her neck. She had not been sexually assaulted. The police checked the overpass and found blood on it. The police suspected that the woman's dead body had been dropped from the overpass. It was thought she had been in the water anywhere from a week to a month. The police found no pieces of identification on her. She also didn't match any missing persons reports. She was a white woman with shoulder-length hair. Her hair was naturally brown, but had been dyed strawberry blonde. It is believed that she was between 20 and 30 years old. She was between 5'1 and 5'5 and weighed about 100 pounds. She had a lot of dental work done. She had a lot of fillings and she wore partial dentures on her top and bottom teeth. The police released a sketch of the woman, but did not generate any viable leads. Since the police didn't have any pieces of ID to follow up on, they began to trace the items found on the body. They tried to figure out where the hand towel that was found on her head came from. It had a Canadian whiskey logo on it, Weiser's. Printed on the towel in Gaelic is an Irish toast. The police learned that towel was manufactured in Ireland and then exported to Toronto, Ontario. It was then sold in stores in Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal. However, by that point, the towels had been sold for quite some time. The other problem was that in the 1970s, Montreal had the highest population of people in Canada, Toronto had the second, and Ottawa had the sixth. Plus, these cities have a lot of people who visit for business and pleasure. The towel had roses printed on it. They could not find out where the rose towel came from. The J cloth was very common, and it was impossible for the police to trace where it came from. Nor did they find anything out about the green tablecloth. The police also tried to figure out where the three neckties came from. One was red with white hexagons on it, with red dots in the middle of the hexagons. Another was a blue and black striped tie. They were generic ties, and the police couldn't find their origins. The third tie seemed to be the most promising. It is called a Canadian tie. It's navy blue with three Canadian flag emblems on it. The police learned that the Canadian ties were manufactured in Montreal and sold in Ontario and Quebec. Finally, the police looked at the cable, which was about 2 feet long. They learned it was commonly used for cable TV hookups. It was used in the areas of Brockville, Ontario, Ottawa, and Montreal. The police thought that the cable could have come from a hotel or a motel. But employees at hotels and motels in those areas hadn't noticed any missing cables. The police checked with cable companies in the area to see if anyone had recently required a replacement cable. But this line of inquiry did not lead to any leads. Initially, it was thought that the dentures were manufactured outside of Canada, but upon further investigation, it seems that they came from southern Ontario. Unfortunately, none of these items helped narrow down where the woman may have came from. Most items came from eastern Ontario, like Ottawa, and western Quebec, like Montreal. If you aren't familiar with Canadian geography, Ontario and Quebec are neighboring provinces. but this wasn't a major break because the woman had been found in eastern Ontario. She was found about 35 miles from Ottawa, and Montreal is about 90 miles away. So it wasn't long before the case went cold. Two years later, the police released another, more detailed sketch. But the woman still went unidentified. For 12 years, the body was kept in a provincial morgue in Toronto. It was the longest time that the authorities held onto a body. She was finally buried in Toronto Cemetery in 1987. The police routinely did follow-up investigations. In 1999, they developed a DNA profile of the woman, but this did not help identify her. In 2005, there was a routine review of the case. The medical examiner made some adjustments to the initial report. The medical examiner placed her age at between 20 and 30 years old. This was revised, and the medical examiner thought she was between 25 and 50. Also, it was initially thought that she was murdered a week to a month before her body was found. But, upon further review, she may have been killed in the autumn of 1974, about 3/4 of a year before her body was found. The police also released a new sketch. They also offered a $50,000 reward for information. Once again, no viable leads were generated. In 2011, the police thought they caught a big break. They developed a partial DNA profile of a man from a bloodstain on the green tablecloth, but they didn't find a match. In 2017, the police released images of a 3D bust of the woman, but the case continued to be cold. In July 2018, the body was exhumed and a new DNA sample was taken. The DNA profile was then given to the DNA Doe Project, a nonprofit organization that uses genetic genealogy to help identify John and Jane Does. Then we come to 2021, 46 years after the body was found. Of course, a lot had changed in those 4.5 decades. In 1975, the three biggest movies in the world were Jaws, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Jaws is considered the first summer blockbuster movie.
It was the first movie to earn over $100 million at the American box office.
At the time, it was the biggest box office hit of all time. It held the title for 2 years until Star Wars surpassed it. In 2021, the biggest movie was Spider-Man No Way Home. It was the only American film in the top three. The second biggest film was the most expensive Chinese movie ever made, the war film, The Battle at Lake Changjing. Rounding out the top three was another Chinese film, the comedy, Hi Mom. Some popular books released in 1975 include the historical epic, Shogun by James Cavill, the young adult classic, Tuck Everlasting by Natalie Babbitt, and Stephen King's second novel, the vampire classic, Salem's Lot. Popular books published in 2021 were Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, Claire and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro, and The Final Girl Support Group by Grady Hendrix. Products introduced in 1975 included the Betamax home video system, the Whack-A-Mole arcade game, and the ultimate novelty product, the Pet Rock. For the first time, you could snack on Nature Valley granola bars and Pop Rocks and drink Country Time lemonade. In 2021, Apple introduced their AirTags, Amazon released their robot, the Astro, and Atari released Atari VCS. Atari VCS pays homage to their first console, the Atari 2600, which was released in 1977, 2 years after the body was found. Also in 2021, three major fast food chains entered the chicken sandwich wars, which started in 2019. McDonald's released the Crispy Chicken Sandwich, Burger King had the Chicken Sandwich, and Taco Bell introduced the Crispy Chicken Sandwich Taco. You could also get oat milk drinks from Starbucks, and Subway revamped their menu. In July 2021, the police identified the woman known as the Nation River Lady. Later that year, they also identified a suspect.
She was identified as 48-year-old Jewel Parchman Langford. Langford had lived in Jackson, Tennessee, where she co-owned a spa with her ex-husband. At some point, she was in Florida, and she met Rodney Nichols, who was 16 years younger than her. They began a romantic relationship. In April 1975, just weeks before her body was found, Langford moved to Montreal to live with 32-year-old Nichols. She told her family that she would keep in touch. The last time anyone heard from her was April 22nd. On June 4th, 1975, about a month after the body was found, her friend traveled to Montreal and spoke to the police. On June 7th, the police talked to Rodney Nichols. He said that one day he came home and Langford was drunk. They got into an argument. She was lonely and wanted to take a trip across Canada by herself. He took her wallet and keys. He said when he took her wallet, he saw her driver's license and saw her birth date. He claimed she had lied about her age. She was much older than he thought, which only worsened the fight. He said he went to bed that night. The next morning, he went to work, and when he got home, Langford was gone. He told the police that the last time he heard from her was a few days ago. She had called and told him she was in Vancouver, British Columbia. She asked him to join her, and he said no. She said she would come back for his birthday the following week. The police followed up with Nichols 5 days later. He said he hadn't heard from Langford since the call from Vancouver. Although one of Langford's friends had talked to the Montreal police in June, they did not file a missing persons report until August. The police conducted no further investigation into the missing person report. In 2021, the police tracked down Rodney Nichols, who was 80 years old and living in a retirement home in Hollywood, Florida. He was in a wheelchair, had recently been diagnosed with dementia. On February 1, 2022, members of the Ontario Provincial Police, along with the FBI, went to the retirement home. The Ontario police questioned him while the FBI monitored the interview. The police told Nichols they were questioning him about the disappearance of Jewel Parchman Langford. He said he didn't know anything about it. Then they revealed that her body had been found in the river in 1975 and they had recently identified her. Nichols then said that she had died in an accident. They were on a sailboat and it capsized. He then admitted to killing her, but he said he drowned her because he was depressed. But the police knew that wasn't true because there was no water in her lungs. Nichols then admitted that they got into a fight in his home and he killed her. He then dumped her body in the river. The police showed him photographs of the neckties and he said they were his. They also showed him pictures of the towels and the tablecloth. He said he didn't remember them, but acknowledged they probably came from his home. He was then asked why he confessed to the murder. He said that he wanted to come clean. Nichols then voluntarily gave a sample of his DNA. It was compared to the partial profile found on the green tablecloth. It was 190 times more likely to be from Nichols than a person related to him. In September 2022, a warrant was issued for Rodney Nichols' arrest. In July 2023, the Canadian authorities filed an extradition request. In October 2023, a federal judge granted the request. However, Rodney Nichols will probably never face trial due to his cognitive state. His lawyer is also currently arguing that his confession should not be used as evidence because of his mental capabilities. One question that many people have is why didn't the police connect the body with the missing persons report? After all, Jewel Parchman Langford went missing from Montreal, which is just 90 miles from where the body was found. The police cited problems with the communications between the two provinces. She went missing from Quebec and was found in Ontario. They also pointed out that exchanging information was more difficult at the time. Another problem was that police believed Nichols when he said that Langford went on a trip. So they thought she was still alive on May 3rd, when her body was found. but after 47 years, the police feel satisfied that the murder of Jewel Parchman Langford is now solved. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Like we said in the opening, if you have a case you want to suggest for Into the Killing, please visit our website, criminallylisted.com. But that's all for today. Thank you again for listening. Please stay safe and take care of yourself.